Welcome to the Sleep as a Skill podcast. My name is Molly McLaughlin, and I own a company that optimizes sleep through technology, accountability, and behavioral change. Each week, I'll be interviewing world-class experts ranging from doctors, innovators, and thought leaders to give actionable tips and strategies that you can implement to become a more skillful sleeper. Let's jump into your dose of practical sleep training. Welcome to the Sleep as a Skill podcast. My guest today is Dr. Mindy Pelz. She is the best-selling author, keynote speaker, nutritional and functional medicine expert who has spent over two decades helping thousands of people successfully reclaim their health. She is a recognized leader in the alternative health field and a pioneer in the fasting movement, teaching the principles of a fasting lifestyle, diet variation, detox, hormones, and more. Her popular YouTube channel combines the latest science with practical lifestyle tools every person can use to reset their health. She is the host of one of the leading science podcasts, The Resetter Podcast, and the author of three best-selling books, The Menopause Reset, The Reset Factor, and The Reset Kitchen. Now, one of the reasons that I'm very excited to have Mindy on today is because I had the opportunity to hear her speak at Biohacking Congress earlier this year in 2021. I was really blown away by her passion, but particularly her focus on sleep and how fasting can work in tandem with improving your overall health, of course, and then by and large, improve sleep as a result or in alignment with that. But also on this topic of for women in particular or people that are menstruating, throughout this process of navigating perimenopause, menopause, and postmenopause, and all the various ways that sleep can find its way into that conversation, but in alignment with that, how to bring in fasting in a kind of responsible and mindful manner while navigating those things and not seeing that actually have ill effects on our health and, of course, in this podcast, on our sleep. So I think you're going to really be interested in this. And she really lays out a pretty clear map by which you can ensure that you're working in alignment with if you're delving into this conversation of fasting or you're in this, you or someone you know is navigating perimenopause, menopause, postmenopause. So I think this is going to absolutely be a really, really important conversation. We also talk about HRV and how you can utilize HRV in this conversation too, seeing when would be a good time to add what can be an element of a stressor to the body with fasting, but with a strategic measure and knowing the long-term potential positive gains, but doing that in a way that you're mindful of where your body is at the moment and leaning into some of these pieces of tech to guide you. So without further ado, let's jump into the podcast. Now, before we get into the podcast, I do want to take a quick minute to give a shout out to our sponsor, BetterHelp, or as I like to call it, a therapist in your pocket. It's the exact app that I used when I was going through my really challenging period of insomnia while traveling overseas. And the ability to maintain a consistent therapist in real life was just really not an option for me since we were jumping around from country to country. So the ability to, with using my phone, have video calls weekly with my therapist, I was paired with I connected with a great therapist right off the bat, but I do know other people who have been able to kind of shop around with some of the therapists on that app until they find a great fit for them. And in between those calls, one of the things that I found was really helpful is that you can also send voice notes, text messages, images in between that, you know, longer weekly video call so that you do have this really very real ongoing connection and support that I certainly, at least in my experience, hadn't felt with real life therapists that I had used in the past. And also the pricing structure is much more competitive than a lot of the real life therapists that you can come into contact with. So I found it to be a lot of benefits. I recommend it to a lot of people that are just kind of going through struggles in their life or just simply want to be able to up level and bring in that level of reflection and awareness into their life about what's both working and not working. And you can certainly cancel at any time. And for our sleepy community, the BetterHelp company has hooked us up with 10% off. If you go to betterhelp.com/sleepisaskill, again, betterhelp.com/sleepisaskill. And one quick shout out, if you're listening to this podcast, it's likely that you consider yourself a bit of a biohacker or just curious about how to influence your own biology. So if you're looking for other ways to further that information, wanted to share with you something coming up called the Biohacking Congress, which is running in Miami on October 16th through the 17th. You can join in person or live stream. I will be there. I will be podcasting live. I have no financial affiliation with Biohacking Congress, but I am excited about it. It's going to be a life-changing weekend. I went to one of the last ones in March of 2021, and it was fantastic. There's going to be 25 plus world-known speakers on biohacking, 20 plus health companies, digital health devices, tons of things going on, thousands of online guests or 1,000 plus online guests. And they are offering a promo code to listeners of HACK50 to get 50% off either on-site or live stream admissions. Again, no financial affiliation with Biohacking Congress, but they are a nice resource at a fairly affordable price to be able to learn more about this process of up-leveling your biology. And you can purchase those tickets at biohackingcongress.com. And welcome to the Sleep is a Skill podcast. I am very, very excited to have my guest here today, Mindy, Dr. Mindy. Thank you so much for taking the time to be here. And I'm happy to, you know, go deeper with you. I know we had an opportunity to connect at Biohacking Congress earlier this year and was blown away with your content and certainly had been aware of some of the work that you've been doing, but just to see you speaking live and to see the passion so palpable up there on the stage, I'm just elated to get an opportunity to speak with you more. So thank you.
Oh, thanks for having me. And like I said, I mean, if we can chat about sleep, I'm like become like obsessed with it. And I have like a long list of hacks that have been working for my menopausal body. So I'm just excited to be here.
Yes. Oh, I'd love to hear that. I know we were chatting before we hit record and you were saying how you're really stepping into this element of like what's possible in mastering sleep. And yeah. I know you've got tons of things to share. And I was also sharing with you too, before we hit record, of one of the things I thought was really one of my favorite, honestly, takeaways out of Biohacking Congress was one of the things you said on a panel where you mentioned how a reframe for women and our cycles and what can be possible if we work in alignment with our cycles of this ability to almost have this built-in sort of system or map, if you will, of how to really lean into different times to ebb and flow of when to fast, when to take it easy, when to eat certain things, when to incorporate certain types of workouts, all of these things that I think many of us might not be aware of. So I'd love to turn the spotlight onto you a bit to hear how you became so knowledgeable in this area and how this can relate to sleep.
Yeah. You know, what's really interesting is that I think that I never fully appreciated my hormones until they started to go away.
Yes.
So it was like, they were just there, you know, when we get pregnant, I think we had sort of our experience of like what that feels like. We went through puberty, there were waves, but when I hit 40, I really started to see the effects of my hormones coming and going in very unusual patterns. And in an attempt to solve my own hormonal issue, I personally, like a personal value system for me is to solve as many problems with my health as I can through lifestyle. I'm not a fan of like, I haven't taken a medication since I was 20. I am not a fan of what I call the magic mushroom, where we just start throwing all these random supplements and hope that one of them sticks. Although I do think supplements are great, I'm just not a fan of that being the solution. So when I started getting hot flashes and not sleeping and feeling depressed and putting on a little bit of weight and energy crashes, I really went looking for what was the solution. And in that discovery, which was so fascinating, I got reconnected to my cycle. And I started to really analyze all the hormones that were coming and going in a 30-day period. Now, the funny part about this story is that my cycle was disappearing, but yet I was charting it. I was analyzing like, when does estrogen come in and what does estrogen need me to do? And when does testosterone come in and how can I make testosterone more efficient in my body? And why do I need progesterone? And I started to look at all of this and I came out of my own desire to solve my own health problems and realized, oh my God, as women, we should not be eating the same. We should not be fasting the same. We should not be exercising the same at every single day of our cycle. We have different needs because we have different hormones. And once I figured out how to eat, how to fast, how to exercise in accordance with my cycle, like my hormonal health was better than ever. And then I started thinking, why aren't we teaching this to women? Why aren't we discussing this? Why is this like, this is so obvious when you look at it. Why have we never had this conversation before? So that's kind of where my journey started.
I love that. And I love how you share of your own story and how that kind of motivated this going down the rabbit hole on this topic and learning so much about it and really solving and making a difference with your own struggles. And then now so many other women as well. And, you know, I can share from my own experience, there was a period before, you know, some part of my story is I went through my own period of insomnia and that's what birthed, you know, the sleep is a skill. But before going through that period of insomnia, I had this outlook that you just want to, you know, kind of put the pedal to the metal and, you know, this concept of like, yep. Oh, well, don't baby yourself. Oh, just because it's a particular time of the month, like that's just, you know, you got to be your word and let's do this. And, you know, this type of ethos. And clearly that didn't work so well for me.
Right.
And so,
yeah, and you know, it's, you know, what's so interesting is that like sleep, navigating menopause, both of those have two commonalities. You can't muscle your way through it.
Yes. Yes.
And so those of us that have been type A, like, let me just do a little bit more. Let me just push myself a little bit harder. Women, we are not biologically made to push at any time of our life. So whenever we approach anything from that pushing standpoint, our hormones suffer. And that was another really big aha because I was a competitive athlete. I played on a tennis scholarship in college. I was always under the impression that I could outwork anybody. I could out-exercise anybody. But then when I hit menopause, I realized, no, this is not a moment to push. This is actually a moment to understand myself and to actually do the opposite, to kind of ease up a little bit. And that's another thing that I think, you know, I have this picture of Rosie the Riveter in my kitchen and I would pass it and I'd look at her one day. I remember looking at her and going, I don't know, Rosie, I'm not sure we're supposed to do it all. And I'm like the total feminist. I'm like the one who's like, I'm the, you know, primary breadwinner of my family. Like I believe women can accomplish anything. Yet our physiology tells us we have to take breaks. We have to eat different. We have to rest at certain times of our cycle. And we're not being taught this.
Yeah. And even as you share that, I feel like there's like a nervous system, like, just even hearing the reminder that yes, this is important and to have that built in and to be aware of that. And that's okay. We don't have to make ourselves wrong. So even just from that philosophy, I think is so important. And you have a bit of a kind of map that you've created for people. I'm wondering if you can kind of walk us through what that looks like and how, you know, we can use that to fuel some of our decision-making on what we're taking on and whatnot.
Yeah. So what I did is I took, and I would encourage any woman that's listening, just Google a woman's monthly cycle.
Yes.
And it's very linear. So you'll see that there's times that our hormones are peaking and there's times that our hormones are dipping. So the first thing to understand is that in those dips, we can do something different than in the peak. So then what we did is we took that and we created a circle. So it was like, and I just used 30 days. You know, this is the other confusing thing is that some women have 24-day cycles, other women have 34-day cycles. So what we did is we took it and put it into a circle. And then I decided, you know, you hear a lot of women talk about, you know, the luteal phase, the follicular phase. It's really boring. So I'm like, let's just name it for what it is. And so I created different languaging around it. And basically the first part of our cycle, day one through day 10, is what I call a power phase. When I go into the ovulation phase, which is day 11 to day 15, I call that the manifestation phase. And I'll explain why in each one of these.
Yeah.
Then when you come out of that ovulation, your hormones are low again. This is a power phase, another power phase. And then the week before our cycle, about day 20, is what I call nurture phase. And the reason I gave it that name is because we need to nurture ourselves at that point. We need to slow down. That's a really pivotal time that week before our cycle. So then when I looked at these different hormones, I started to figure out, okay, what are the hormonal needs? So if you look at estrogen, estrogen is coming in really strong from day one to day 10. And estrogen needs you to be insulin sensitive. So those of you that do keto, those of you that fast, like go to town from the day your period starts till day 10, you can do as much as you want. Now, I have women say, but I don't feel like doing anything on day one. But if you follow this fasting circle, you will be amazed that when day one happens, you're like, oh, I feel so much better. You don't feel worse. The only reason you feel worse is because you didn't mind that week before your cycle. You didn't pay attention to what progesterone needed. So on day one to day 10, we do keto, we do fasting. If you want to run a marathon, you can run a marathon. That's why it's called the power phase. Once you hit days, you know, 11, now your body's ovulating. Some women, it'll be day 15 that she'll ovulate, but that little 5-day window, you've got estrogen at its highest and you've got testosterone at its highest. So this is when estrogen is the hormone that improves language for us. So we're great conversationalists when estrogen is high. We're really good at multitasking when estrogen is high. Our hair looks great. Our skin looks great. We're quite beautiful when estrogen is at its height. So anything you need to do that requires beauty, language, that's a good time to do it. You've also got testosterone, and testosterone is your motivation and it's your drive. So I always say, if you want to ask for a raise, if you have something really difficult, you need to talk to somebody about. If you're going to, you know, go on a big speaking stage, do it when you're ovulating because you are powerful. That's why we call it manifestation. And, you know, we don't want you to work out a ton at this time. I recommend intermittent fasting at this point. I don't recommend a longer fast. I really think you should focus on your microbiome at this moment because all these hormones need to be broken down by the microbiome. You could do more weightlifting. You have so much testosterone in you at that time that if you want to build muscle, that little 5-day window is a great time to build muscle. So, and then when we come out of that, we have another 5 days, about day 16 to 19, where I call that a power phase. It's very much like the first one. You can do more keto, you can do more restriction, you can do more fasting. And then the last phase starts about day 20. And this is the nurture phase. And this is where everything has to change. So you got your workouts need to be yoga and walking in nature. If you have a good rhythm with your workouts, great, but this would not be the time to start training for a marathon or to push yourself. Progesterone is very vulnerable to cortisol. So we want to keep cortisol low. So you don't go into a long fast. In fact, I don't even recommend you fast during this time. You don't want to be in ketosis. So more foods like tropical fruits, citrus fruits, beans, potatoes, squashes, these will feed progesterone. You don't want to be staying up till 2 a.m. You've really got to mind your sleep during that time. And then if you do that, once your cycle starts, you'll feel good again. Like day one starts over and the whole cycle starts again.
Yes. I'm so, well, one, thank you so much for taking the time to, you know, work those out. I was just taking tons of notes. And two, I love what you're pointing to around day 1 through 10 in particular. And that's one of the things we see too, is sleep is a skill. Everyone we work with as of 2021 are all wearing the Oura ring. And so every single person they get to see. So for women that are of menstruating age, they can see some of these measurable effects. So the changes in their body temperature and their HRV. And I think one of the things, once we start getting more of these dialed in, it can be really such a new way of relating to our cycle and our period in particular, because what you're saying is so true. That's what eventually often women shift to, is like, they're excited for their period in a new way that, right? Because now suddenly, oh my God, our HRV went up, our heart rate went down, everything, you know, like really measurably shifted. Our body temperature went down. There's all kinds of things, so that it can really be a power phase, where so much of the, there seems to be this misnomer that that's the period where you really baby yourself, not baby yourself, but where you really, right?
Yes. It's a total misnomer. Thing. Everybody's like, oh, you know, it's like the red tent theory. Like, oh, you're bleeding. Go chill out.
Yeah.
But actually it's only because you didn't manage that week before, right? Your hormones are at their lowest. And honestly, if you do the circle, the way I just explained it, when your period starts, you'll be like, okay, I feel normal now. I feel good. And the other weird part for the fasting world is that you actually will feel like fasting on day one. But when I get women that are like, I'm struggling to fast, and I always ask them, what day is your cycle? And they're like, oh, I don't know. It's like day, you know, 22. And I'm like, yeah, I struggle to fast on day 22 as well, because yeah. Your body wants you to bring up glucose. It doesn't want you to fast.
Yes. Yes. So. That's so helpful. And I think also for the sleep conversation. So, and we can certainly speak to some of your, I know you've got tons of information on there, but I think even that alone, that reframe can be so powerful for women, of almost the awareness that that area, that time is so important to nurture and to prioritize sleep, because it is so common to have difficulty falling asleep, staying asleep, all of those things. So one, to know that we're not alone, we can anticipate this area, but then take care of it accordingly. And so from that place, do you find that that's an empowering place for women to be able to almost have the heads up to take care of themselves during that period versus like, oh no, now I have insomnia, now it's a snowball effect and with question marks as to why?
Yeah, I think it's a total empowerment to know that when our hormones are coming and going, they are giving us superpowers, which is great. So let's stop like estrogen. I always say like, I feel like estrogen gets a bad rap, but I'll tell you, we need estrogen, good estrogen. It makes us, I don't want to say superior because that's not the right, but it makes us very, very powerful.
Sure.
And we should not villainize it. But we need to understand how to work in alignment with it. Progesterone really makes us calm. It wants us to chill out. And so, yeah, if you don't mind it, sleep is going to be a little harder. So what I'm finding is that we have never been taught this. So when you start to teach women that the hormones are coming and going, and they're going to change your mood, they're going to change your sleep, they're going to change your hair, they're going to change your skin, then you don't look in the mirror and go, what's wrong with me? Why can't I sleep? Why is my hair not looking the way I want it to look today? It's all just about your hormones. And when you love on them and you work with them, then all of a sudden it stops becoming your fault.
So wise. And where do women fit in who are either have been on the pill for an extended period of time or they're post-menopause, you know, those two categories? How do we think about that?
Yeah. So there's a few like weird, like little spots like that. So for starters, and since I've gone publicly to talk about all this, I cannot believe how many women don't have a cycle, like young women.
Yes.
That's concerning, because your cycle is how you detox every month. It is a shedding process. So that part has shocked me. Women on the pill, women on a Mirena IUD, they tend to have an unusual cycle. I think the best way you can do it is the minute you hit day one, just make sure you're mapping it. Like I use the Clue app. I just map that first day. And then that's the start of the fasting circle that I talked about. So you're not necessarily going based off of, you know, if all of a sudden 15 days later, let's say you get a period, well, guess what? Day one starts over again. So you're using that first day of bleed as the marker to start the 30-day period that I talked about. Postmenopausal women, the challenge for them is that estrogen's low, progesterone's low, and they're never coming back. So we still have to use the principles. The freedom for the postmenopausal woman is you can do it whenever. You don't have to follow a 30-day cycle, but you still have to make sure that you're not fasting all the time. You're not doing keto all the time. You need to have days where you step out of that and you're doing more hormone building days. So you can kind of do that. We've come up with a 30-day hormone reset that I teach in my academy, and I just have them go through, just start day one whenever you want. Mm. Whereas if somebody has a cycle, they've got to start day one. They've got to do it in accordance with their cycle. Postmenopausal women don't need to do that. And then the last thing I'll say that's fascinating, and I'm doing more research on this, is that more women ovulate at a full moon. So we can map ourselves to the full moon and just say, okay, the moon is full. today. So that's maybe day 10, and then go through the circle the way I explained it according to the full moon.
Can you explain that real quick, just a little bit more, just because, you know, it can land for, we tend to get a lot of like biohacker types, what have you, and it can land as like, wait, what? That's like, so woo.
Yeah.
But it's really interesting when people dive into that. I believe it was, what's the book? Follow the Sun, or one of these books that's really centric on the importance of the light dark cycle and some of the origins of like the word lunatic coming from lunar cycle and some of the changes in the light activity, and people suddenly are able to be up later because of the changes in the moon cycle, how women used to lean into the lunar cycle more as a group. So curious if you can just shed a little, no pun intended.
Yeah. From a scientific level, you know, I'm currently like diving through all that and looking at it to see, but from a physiological level, this is the way it makes sense to me.
Sure.
Is that the tides change according to the full moon. So the magnetic resonance of the earth is going to change.
Sure.
And as women, we are more in tune with that magnetic resonance. And so when the full moon is going, we're also seeing tide changes. We also, so your body's just in sync with that magnetic energy. So now, not every woman does that, but I think the cleaner, it would be really interesting to see a study that, like, if your diet's clean, you don't have a lot of toxins, your stress levels are low, do those women, are they living more, are they ovulating more with the full moon or not? So, and I don't think I haven't seen a study on that yet. Now, for the postmenopausal woman, let's just say the majority of your time of your cycle, you've probably been somewhere around the full moon because the magnetic pull of the earth is so strong that I am sure that you've been more likely to be around that full moon. So once your period stops, you still have a rhythm to your hormones. Like if you look like a 13-year-old, when she goes into puberty, it takes, you know, 4 or 5 years for the brain and the ovaries to get a rhythm with each other. Well, when a woman goes into menopause, it's going to take 4 to 5 years for the rhythm to slow down. Hormones don't just turn on and off. They have a pattern that takes time to build up and a pattern to mellow out.
Yeah, so helpful. One of the things that I thought you were really particularly made such a great point about in one of your speeches at Biohacking Congress was when women are kind of trying to navigate this period of life where perimenopause, menopause, and beyond, and they go into their doctors and they're complaining of some of these different symptomologies and often leave with a recommendation or prescription for, you know, more in the realm of it's kind of their problem, or has a pressure or a suggestion to start layering in pharmaceuticals. And I felt that that was really a cool, you know, mission of yours to help women really navigate this. And certainly sleep can be one of those things. So we might see women leaving and that's one of their main symptoms is the difficulty sleeping. And now they've got Ambien or certain, you know, anti-anxiety medications and all of these things that we know can be really problematic down the road. So I'm just wondering if you can speak a bit more to that and what we've seen for so many women, what the path can be and the opportunity that there can be to learn this kind of way of navigating it.
Yeah, it's such a great question. And what happened to me is at 40, I literally was in the best shape of my life. Like I felt invincible. I slept great. I always joke. I'm like, I just wanted to fit in my skinny jeans, like my favorite pair of skinny jeans. Like I was running marathons. I really felt invincible. By 43, I was a hot mess. I wasn't sleeping. I had night sweats. I was depressed. I was anxious. And so I was trying to find a solution, and it got so bad, I literally would have taken a drug. I was looking to take one. I'm like, just give it to me because I got to end this madness. And I ran into a friend of mine who was a very well-respected OB. And she said, I asked her, I was like, I told her my symptoms. And she like, there was something about the moment. She literally stopped and looked at me and said, Mindy, I have a practice full of women with these symptoms and my medical textbooks have failed me. And she's like, I could tell you to go on HRT, but I don't see that work for everybody. I could tell you to go on to an antidepressant, but I'm not a fan of them. They're highly addictive. They're hard to get off of. So she started going down each one. And I'm sitting there thinking, oh my God, if you don't know the answer, who's going to know the answer? So she was like one of the top OBs at Kaiser in Silicon Valley. So I started finding the answers. And that's when I realized, gosh, there are things that have to change after 40 in our lifestyle. And if we do not change those things, then these hormones get out of control. And I just started playing with the different pieces. And that's how I sort of, I solved my own path. And then I practiced it on all my people in social media, and everybody started getting the same result.
Wow. Oh, so powerful. Yeah. Cause you know, that was one of my stories when I wasn't sleeping. I went into the doctors. We're traveling internationally with Google Translate. I go into the doctors and I leave with Ambien. We travel to the next place and then, oh, here's some Xanax. Here's this, you know, and clearly that was a particular path that could have had a particular type of life. So I really appreciate you sharing that. And also your vulnerability and saying like, you know, I just wanted to, you know, make a dip, fix this thing. Right. And so there are times where that's where we're at. So to shed a light that there could be another path is so important. Real quick, just wanted to touch on, because I know you're known as well, you've lots of different areas of knowledge. And one of the areas that people really look to you around is fasting as well. And, you know, when some of us are going through all of this, and we got a hormonal debate, we might think that fasting would be too extreme or too much. I wonder if you could just quickly touch on how that can be powerful for women. And I know you already laid out the timing, but you know, we also see for different people how leaning into fasting seems to, if done mindfully, can really make a difference with our sleep or HRV or heart rate, all kinds of other things. Just curious if you can share.
Yeah. I mean, the research on fasting is vast and impressive.
Yes.
So if you're unsure, go to my YouTube channel because I bring all the research out so people can see it. But here's the basis of it is if you look at things like PCOS, infertility, menopause, even if we go into metabolic syndrome stuff like cardiovascular problems, obesity, at the root of all of those problems is insulin resistance. And there is no better way to solve insulin resistance than fasting. The science shows it. People are showing it. There's just no better way. Well, now let's look at a woman like in the perimenopause years. As estrogen goes up and down, which is what happens in your 40s, it's like going up, it's high one day, and then it's like lower than it's ever been the next day. I mean, again, just talk to a 47-year-old woman and ask her how her hair is doing. Like one moment it's like, whoosh, it's big and puffy. The next moment it's flat. That's all estrogen. But what that wild ride of estrogen does is it makes you more insulin resistant. So if you already are insulin resistant going into menopause, you're in for a hormonal like shit show. I mean, it's it's not going to be great. Yeah. So I like fasting to really help balance estrogen out. Where fasting doesn't work for us isn't when we're trying to balance progesterone out.
Yes.
Because fasting is very much like exercise. It raises cortisol, it's just a little bit. And everybody, when they hear that is like, what do you mean? Like, I don't want cortisol to raise, but actually a little bit of cortisol going up makes you very strong, very alert, makes your body adapt. You want a little bit of cortisol, except the week before your period. That progesterone does not want an increase in cortisol. So what we started teaching people is in the most simple sense, fast most of your cycle, it's going to help your hormones, but not the week before your period. That's like the most simple way to explain
it. Simple. So good. And I appreciate that too, because I've seen different women navigating different periods in their life and they might've said, oh, okay, you know, I went through, you know, adrenal issues or lots of stress, chronic stress, burnout, yada, yada. And now they're saying, I'm going to be gentle. There's no room for fasting. And I think you really point to, and I think absolutely people should check out your many resources because there's so much that we can use this as a tool to actually facilitate that healing. So
yeah. And on the adrenal fatigue thing, I think this is a really important point. We have to not shy away from hormetic stressors. So, and just so your listeners know, hormetic stress is when you get a little bit of stress, your body adapts in a very favorable way. So if I'm an adrenal gland that's exhausted, which is sort of a misnomer onto itself, it's the whole HPA access, but let's for simplicity's sake say that it is.
Bigger topic, but I hear you.
Absolutely. Exactly. Bigger topic another time. But you place a little bit of the stress, just a tiny bit, through something like fasting on those adrenals, and you can actually re-energize those adrenals. So, and I've done videos on this on YouTube where I have a whole protocol for adrenal fatigue, but we've taken people in extreme adrenal fatigue and used some really gentle practices of fasting and have watched it heal better than a supplement would.
Yes. Yes. Okay. Well, I know you have so much knowledge on that. So people definitely have to check that out. And since I know you have really gone through lots of different ways of mastering your own sleep, we wanted to hear a little bit about how you're managing your sleep. So what we can learn from that. So a couple of questions on your, you know, kind of personal relationship to your sleep. So the first question is, what does your nightly sleep routine look like right now? I'm sure it, you know, evolves and changes, but what are you leaning into at the moment?
Okay. So I have a couple of things. So I've really recently discovered the routine around sleeping matters. So I'm going to bed at the same time. I'm getting up at the same time. I've also realized the timing, and this was through, I've used Oura, I've used Whoop. I'm kind of used them both, but I really saw that my HRV improved if I ate 2 hours before I went to bed. If I eat and I go to bed, my HRV tanks. So I'm trying to eat dinner a little bit earlier. The other thing I've been doing is we have in our bedroom, I leave the shades open on the side where the sun rises.
Yes.
And so I'm getting natural sunrise come in. Since I started doing that, I haven't had to use an alarm clock to wake up. Nice. So that has been incredible. And then when I get up in the morning, I go outside, I have a little meditation routine I do. And I sit outside, spend the first hour of the day outside in my backyard getting sunlight. So I've been really working on the timing, like time my circadian rhythm with what there's like a pattern to it. Mm. Now, outside of that, I've got a few more hacks. I've got a weighted blanket.
Yes.
Love it. It's working great. Sometimes I got to like pull it, like the week before my cycle is the toughest time to sleep. I got to pull that thing like up over my head. Like I got to get everything weighted down. The game changer is the chili pad.
Yes.
I don't know if a game changer.
Yeah.
And the week before my cycle, I got to put that chili pad way down.
Same. So, yes.
Yeah. So that's another one. Magnesium. I've been supplementing with magnesium. And then the other one is melatonin.
Yeah.
And since I've been doing that, my sleep is dialed in. It's doing really well.
That's great. Is there a type of magnesium that you prefer?
Well, so I've been experimenting with a bunch of different ones. I'll tell you the brand I like right now is Upgraded Labs.
Yeah, absolutely.
That one seems to work the best for me. I don't know what Barton put in that product, but it works really well.
Yes, I have it. He's coming on the podcast later on in a couple months. And he'd sent some of those to test out. And I've been really, really liking those. It's awesome.
The first time I used them, I was shocked. He gave me a sample and my HRV was like, and my sleep recovery was through the roof. And all I changed was adding that supplement in.
Amazing.
And I was like, what is this? This is really cool. So
awesome.
I've tried a lot of magnesium for sleep, but that one worked. And then the other one I'm using recently, and it's not for everybody, but I've been using melatonin and I'm using, it's a suppository.
Yes.
So it gets in, it's called Sandman. It's the same guy who does the Zen spray.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Yep.
That is incredible.
Wow. And how do you think about melatonin? Since I know there's, you know, different camps on, oh, no melatonin, and some people like high dose melatonin, the suppositories, all these different modalities. How do you think about melatonin?
Yeah. I mean, I've had melatonin work really great for me orally or suppository. They've both worked really great. The suppository seems to be working better. I'm actually doing a 90-day trial right now with it to see, because I see there's other benefits to melatonin.
Yeah.
And so I'm like, let me try it for 90 days. And then I want to get off of it and see if my sleep is still as good. So I'm curious if I have like a deficiency of melatonin, and if I bring that up, then can I get off the supplement? That's to be determined.
Okay. So, well, I'm sure you'll do some, YouTubing and what have you.
I will.
Definitely will. That. Okay, cool.
Yeah.
And then the second question is, what would we see on your nightstand? And that could be like proverbial nightstand or, you know, apps or ambiance, gadgets, anything to be aware of.
Well, okay. So there's a couple of things. A glass of water. I always have a glass of water.
Yes.
The Serifos is a great supplement. If you're under a lot of stress, it brings cortisol down.
Sure.
So I always have Serifos in case I'm going through a stressful time, wake up at 2 a.m. The other really weird thing I started doing years ago, and this is a little more woo-woo, is have you heard of morphic energy fields?
Oh, I have heard, but I'd love to hear how you're leaning into that.
Okay. So I think of morphic energy fields like a radio station. They're like frequencies of information. And sure. There's a lot of belief we can tap into these frequencies. And your books give off a frequency. So I actually have very positive mindset books on my nightstand as a way of just putting in positive vibes into my sleep area. So I don't have any fiction. I don't have any like, you know, angry books or books that have any conflicting or controversial topics. They're all like positive mindset. A lot of Pema Chodron. I've got to Let It Go by David Hawkins.
Oh, it's one of my favorite books. Yeah. That was one of the books that was on the many, many layers of things that kind of brought back my sleep was actually that book. Yep. And actually the Audible version too, that's very calming narrator, but I love that one. And that's one of the first times I've heard anyone mention that. And it almost leans into kind of the feng shui conversation or, you know, what's in your environment really impacting your reality. So I appreciate that one. That's very unique.
It was just something I learned I learned morphic energy fields. I'm like, I looked at my books different. I'm like, where are they? What are they saying? What energy are they giving off? I love books. I have books all over my house.
Same. Yeah.
But the books on the nightstand are all positive, like calming and the way I want to think in the world.
I love that. And that's also just in alignment too with kind of doing a very least bedroom audit. You can certainly do an audit of your whole life and what's around you, but certainly in the bedroom. And is this in alignment with kind of a sleep sanctuary or something that just brings you joy to go into? So I love that.
Yeah. Yeah. And I would also say my bedroom's the cleanest room in my house.
Nice. Yes. Which is also important. You don't want the clutter and to feel like, ugh, when you get in there. Great. And then the last question is, what would you say has been kind of made the biggest change to your sleep game or biggest aha moment for this conversation of sleep for you?
You know what the biggest one is? And I want to give you a free solution, but it's really the frickin' chili pad.
I know, it's so good. And people can be like, really? What is the big deal? This like, you know, mattress pad.
Right.
But honestly, it is a bit. And I was resistant to trying it because first of all, I was like, well, I don't want to be dependent on this thing. We were traveling for 3 years, digital nomads. We're in Southeast Asia and, you know, backpack carry on. And we're like, we can't travel around with this giant, it's not giant, but you know, a thing you can't put that in, check that. And yet, so I was hesitant, then tested it and I'm with it. I'm addicted now.
Yeah, it is truly amazing. And I was the same way. I was like, I don't understand. Why would I want my mattress to be cold?
Yes.
But then when I started to do the research, your core body temperature has to go down anywhere from 1 degree to 5 degrees in order for the parasympathetic nervous system to kick in. I'm like, okay. And then what I do now is if I wake up at 2 a.m, I put that thing down, I make the temperature go down and it knocks me out.
Yes. I liked how, I think it was Rob Wolf that put it in a kind of ancestral kind of mindset or framing. And he was pointing to this concept that, you know, thousands of years ago, it's likely as we have been living much more in alignment with nature, really outside in nature, but likely sleeping on the ground, and the ground would be much cooler than anywhere else in the environment. And then even this kind of theorizing that likely sleeping with things like hides or something heavy, and that could explain this idea of a weighted blanket. So between the cold ground and the heaviness of the, you know, because almost tapping back into this kind of ancestral knowledge is the thinking, which I liked.
Brilliant.
It's a cool way to think of like, why are we leaning into this technology, but how this aligns with our, you know, kind of our modern society. So those are fantastic tips. So how else can people learn more about what you've got? I know you have a book that's really, I think, so important for so many women to know about, maybe even for the significant others in their lives.
Yeah.
My fiance he knows more about my cycle. He's like, are you in luteal right now? What is going on?
That's awesome. It is. That's a good fiance. You got to keep dragged him around. That's awesome.
He's the best. Yeah, exactly. He knows all about it. But also for people who are menstruating, how to make peace with this. Like I had other friends that would call it luteal Lucifer, and like, it doesn't necessarily have to be a bad, horrible thing. You know, it's a, we can really come to, you know, level of grace with navigating these periods. So how can people follow you? What are the best modalities?
Yeah. So you can get the book, The Menopause Reset, if you are over 40. It's a quick, easy read. It has everything you need to do. And it's all about lifestyle changes you should make. So that's a great resource. My YouTube channel is really my passion project. I spend a lot of time, love, energy, making as many videos as I can to really inspire people to fast. So all the science of fasting is there. The application of fasting is there. On Instagram, we take little squares from my videos and we try to bring it in another medium so that people who are maybe not video watchers, maybe they want to see it on a nice little info square. We'll put that on Instagram. I have a free fasting group on Facebook called the Resetter Collaborative. So we fast together. We do a 5-day, all different types of fasts once a month. And if you forget all that, you could just go to drmindypels.com and it's all there.
That is awesome. Wow. Well, I didn't know about the Facebook group. I'm definitely going to tap into that. That sounds incredible. I myself, I've done some shorter fasting period, but I want to start tapping into some longer fasts. Yeah. So definitely going to lean into some of your
teaching there.
So yes, thank you. And I just so appreciate you taking the time, but also just your passion that you share with the world. You know, it's really resonates. I was honestly very much blown away at the Biohacking Congress. Just, it was palpable. It was real. And, you know, you don't see that every day. So anyone listening, I hope you definitely check out her work, because I think it can really be transformative.
Yeah. Oh, thank you. And yeah, I mean, I think on the women front, we haven't been given enough tools.
Yes.
And we've been disempowered in the healthcare system. And it really is time to give women their power back. And so anything I can do to inspire. So thank you and sleep. My gosh, you know, it's funny because I actually have these 5 things in the menopause reset and I've been rethinking, I should have put a 6th one and it should have been sleep.
So. Oh yeah. Well, it's an opportunity for a part 2.
Right. There we go.
Sure. Yes.
There we go.
Well, thank you for sharing.
Thank you, Molly.
And I know you're very much in the conversation. That's, so I'm sure you'll have lots of evolving tips for people. So this is just the beginning, but thank you so much.
Thank you.
You've been listening to the Sleep is a Skill podcast, the number one podcast for people who want to take their sleep skills to the next level. Every Monday, I send out something that I call Molly's Monday Obsessions, containing everything that I'm obsessing over in the world of sleep. Head on over to sleepisaskill.com to sign up.